I'm John Glover. I was Lionel Luther on Smallville, and I will always, always hold on to Smallville. And I hope you all do too.
Previously on Smallville.
You must find the human vessel and destroy it.
The cost of one life is the price that must be paid.
Even if that life is your son.
I don't know how I could have ever loved you. I don't know if I'm ever going to see you again.
You need to know the truth about me.
I won't let you destroy this planet like you did Krypton.
You don't have a choice.
Then it begins.
What have I done?
You've opened the portal for Zod!
And now, the season premiere of Smallville.
Welcome to Always Holding to Smallville. On this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Amore, and I'm joined by from the Daily Planet, the editor-in-chief himself, Zach Benz. What's up, Zach?
Not much. Happy to be here.
So, the Daily Planet. People are like, what's that? Why don't you tell us what that is and how it started, Zach?
A lot like the Daily Planet in the comics. The Daily Planet on Twitter covers current events, both news-related and superhero-related. But since it's based in reality, unfortunately, we have to report on entertainment news when it comes to superheroes rather than, you know, Lois Lane's interviews with Man of Steel himself. I started the page in 2014. It was heavily inspired by Smallville, actually, but also kind of piggybacked off of the new Man of Steel movie, which had a more modern take on the character. So I thought, oh, well, I should kind of modernize the Daily Planet because I didn't see a lot of that going on. And so I started it with a few friends in the back of a van, and it kind of blew up since then. And in 2018, we launched our own website, and now we reach thousands of people with various articles covering a variety of topics. And we also publish virtual print editions that people can print off at home. So it's pretty cool.
Have you printed any off? Do you have any hanging at your house?
No.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah, no, that's insightful to hear because you hear like, oh, the Daily Planet. People are gonna think, oh, it's like a Not a parody account, but like a faux account, like a mockumentary account. You know what I'm saying? Like it's like as if the Daily Planet were real, yeah. But no, you guys have real stories about real things going on. So it's more than just Superman mm-hmm. and all that stuff. So, and you are the Perry White, I guess.
Yeah, that was a title branded to me by my friend who helped me launch the website. At first, I didn't think of myself as an editor in chief or even a publisher, just kind of someone who puts a lot of time and effort into the page. And then she's like, no, dude, you're the editor-in-chief. Her name is Brianna Tager, by the way. She currently helps me out as the copy editor, but she mostly does entertainment stuff for the Daily Planet.
Copy editor. See, this is a legit yeah. newspaper, y'all. When they got people on staff doing copy editing, that's how you know. So
She helps out a lot.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, we all want to be Clark Kent and Lois Lane, but we're all really Perry White or Jimmy Olsen,
yes,
aren't we?
Yes, yes.
So. So, all right, well, you know, well, speaking of, you know, the Daily Planet, that's the site. Speaking of, right, how did you get into Superman? Where did your fandom start? And then how did that lead you to Smallville?
Yeah, it's been a journey, I guess. I actually started watching, my introduction to superheroes started when I was watching a rerun of the Scooby-Doo movies, the new Scooby-Doo movies that ran in like the 70s. When they had crossovers with Cher or Sonny and Cher or the Three Stooges and Batman and Robin. And I thought Batman and Robin were pretty cool. So I was like, oh, I'm going to, you know, learn more about them. And then they kind of introduced me to Superman. And then I became obsessed with Superman because I related to the character more. I grew up on a farm. I was raised by two older people, my grandparents, and they adopted my two sisters and I. And I dreamed of life in the big city. And so I clicked with Superman more than I clicked with billionaire playboy Bruce Wayne.
Right, right. And that the way everybody's like, Batman's so relatable. I'm like, really? Is he though? I mean, yep, when you look at it that way. But that's cool, man. So you have the Clark Kent backstory there, growing up on a farm. And, you know, that's what, so we all bring our own thing to our fandom, right? It's like, you know, that, I mean, I think you and I are around the same age, so you probably started watching Smallville. You know, did you watch it when it first started, or did you watch it later?
I actually picked it up around, I think, around season 6 or the end of season 5. That's when I watched it live, but I watched all the reruns on ABC Family.
ABC Family. God bless ABC Family. There were so many people that come to this podcast I've become friends with, and they started watching Smallville on ABC Family, which is now, what's the name? Freeform, I think is what it's called now. ABC Family, it used to be like Fox Family and the Family Channel, and now it's Freeform. But back in, you know, the mid-2000s, it was ABC Family. That they were showing, I believe it was reruns of like seasons 1 through 3, I believe. I don't know if they ever added any more to that, but because it started during season 4 when it was on the WB. So do you remember any episodes past season 3?
Yeah, I remember season 4, the finale, when Clark throws his crystal into the Arctic and then the fortress forms in the next season. But that's the last episode I remember seeing on ABC Family. And then I went and bought box DVDs and had to catch up and then watched it on the WB, what, the CW.
Yeah. Well, you know what? And hey, speaking of, this is when it changed networks, right? It was the WB up until now. The first 5 years of the show, like, split it right down the middle. The first half of the show is the WB. The second half is the CW. And it's one of the shows that I would say it's one of the shows that made the cut, but it was still the most popular show on the network, you know? And I know Supernatural had just started during Smallville season 5. There was a lot of talk of, you know, which shows are going to stay and go when UPN and the WB became one, because CBS kind of took over that. And so all that behind the scenes TV stuff, right? You know, Aquaman, we did our Always Still on the Aquaman show. That show, had the CW not happened, that show probably would have been on, you know, the WB. I mean, when they greenlit it, the thinking was, well, you know, Smallville's going to, you know, run its course pretty soon, and we need another one of these superhero shows. And, you know, they combined and like, well, we got to have a tent pole that Smallville's our thing. We got to stay with that. So all these things factored into Smallville running as long as it did. And it was very successful during season 5. It was far more successful than anyone thought it would be, beginning move to Thursdays and going up against some powerhouse shows at the time. I don't know what happened exactly. It's like, you know, no one really knows, but they pretty much greenlit Aquaman, but then they didn't. And there was like Wednesdays at 9 Aquaman, and like, nope, off the schedule. So there you have it. Right. But Smallville made the cut and it's still here for 5 more seasons on the CW. So I always say on the WB and the CW, we are in the CW phase now. And, you know, to quote Smallville, the official companion, season 6 by Craig Byrne, available wherever books are sold. Al Goff, creator and executive producer of the show, had this to say about season 6, teasing season 6 before it began. Quote, "The theme is the rise of Lex Luthor. You're definitely going to see the more ruthless Lex Luthor you know from the comic books really start to emerge. The season will also be about the corruption of good. Not only Lana, but Martha. Will she get involved with Lionel? And when Clark does come back from the Phantom Zone, what will it have done to him? We never really explored what happens to somebody inside the Phantom Zone, which is really the ultimate incarceration." So, you know, Al, some good stuff there, Al. The stuff about Lex and Lana is true. Everything else Not true. Did not happen.
Nope.
To Zach.
Nope. I mean, the only thing that happened to Clark after he left the Phantom Zone was he had a cold.
That's right. So, you know, what's funny is, you know, I assume you watched Krypton, the show on Sci-Fi.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And, you know, the end of season one, spoilers, right? Segel gets sucked into the Phantom Zone. You're like, okay, what is season two going to be him breaking out and having to chase all the Phantoms around? Is that just, what's going to I've seen this show before. But anyway. Yeah, it's funny. You know, it's funny when they hype up shows like before they start. And I'm sure they planned some of that. They're like, oh, we'll do this, we'll do that. But they get into the season, it's like, no, none of that. None of that really happened. Well, some of it did, but most of it didn't. Because we are now in the middle, the dead center of the college dropout years, as I call them, Zach, seasons 5 through 7. At least season 5, you went to college for like a little bit, right? Everybody was in college for a little bit. But then, you know, after Dark Thursday happened, everybody just dropped out of college, right? Do you have, you know, wrapping back around, I guess, your fandom a little bit before we really jump into the episode. Do you have a favorite era of the show? Because, you know, there's the high school years, the college dropout years, and we'll try to find a more flattering term for that. I have fun saying that, but I love the show. Okay, guys, so it's all good. Everybody chill. But then there's the Metropolis years, as I call them, seasons 8 through 10. So do you have a favorite phase of the show?
I'd have to say the Metropolis years, but I call them the Daily Planet years.
Fair enough. I mean, that Daily Planet's in Metropolis, so we're both right.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So. And we're also both named Zach, so nice to have another Zach on the show. Mm-hmm. So I just want to shout that out, because you're like, Zach, who's he talking to? Is he talking? No, my name is Zach. Your name is Zach. Yep. We're having a good Zach conversation here. So there you go. So any overall thoughts then going into this season 6, right? I mean, I've given season 4 and 7 a lot of flack on this show, right? And season 4 I enjoyed more rewatching it. Season 6, looking ahead, I'm like, man, there's some good stuff coming up. There's also some not good stuff coming up. So I really don't know where this one's going to fall. When you think about season 6, right, where does it like rank for you? Like when you just think about season 6?
I guess the first half ranks pretty high for me. It's when my favorite fictional character and one of my favorite characters in the show, Lois Lane, embraces her destiny as a reporter at the Daily Planet. It also made the show more darker and a little more adult oriented instead of like high school and college age oriented. This season did. There was more Clark embracing his destiny and fighting it off at the same time, like that conflict within, which a lot of people related to at that time too. And it's way better than season 7. I'll say that. And it's not as stagnant as season 7 made the show feel. So I give them props for that. And they also introduced a lot of Superman elements into the show, like a lot of new Superman elements.
Justice League.
Yes. So. Yep.
Yeah. Now, season 6, yeah, it's just like very, I agree with you. Like, you think about the first half, like, oh, man, it's like the Green Arrow show, right? There's so much green. No, I mean, we would not have the show Arrow and therefore the Arrowverse had this run of episodes, I would say. I mean, I know Green Arrow came back later on in Smallville for the last 3 years and he became popular, but I always liked him as Green Arrow best in this phase, because they kind of like, not that they shied away from him being Green Arrow when he was regular, but it's like, it's a Superman show, they don't want to have too much of him. So but here he was Green Arrow on display. And so this set into the course of events, right, of the first half of season 6, or was culminated in Justice, which we'll get to. But then after that, you have a wedding, you have a fake baby, you know, you have a black and white flashback episode that feels like it's straight out of Lois and Clark. So you have all these things. We'll get into them. That's exciting. But hey, let's get into it now. Zod.
You had feelings for this human.
Yes.
His feelings for you were also strong. They left an unpleasant taste when I consumed his essence. This virus crippling your technology can only be stopped at the original point of infection. It's the only reason I'm here.
You got rid of the virus.
I needed to acquire information.
The power.
It would take days for your people to restore it. If they had that much time.
The Pentagon.
There's something there I need.
What are you going to do?
Finish what I've started. The black ship would have sent a pulse around the world, reshaping its crust.
Into what?
My home.
The planet you were talking about. Krypton.
Only this time it will be perfect. The start of an empire, ruled by the bloodline of Zod.
Zod is the first episode of Smallville's sixth season. It aired on September 28th, 2006. It was written by Stephen S. DeKnight and directed by James Marshall. And right off the top, Zach, I gotta ask you, how did you watch this? Did you watch it on your DVD, off Hulu? How did you watch Zod?
I watched Zod off of my DVD.
All right, you watched Zod off your DVD. Was there a previously on Smallville before the episode started?
Yes.
Okay, because there was not on mine. I don't understand what's going on. I don't know when you bought your DVD. I thought I bought mine pretty early. Maybe I bought an early print. Maybe they messed up. I don't know. But I experienced the same thing when I watched season 5. You guys listen to the season 5 podcast, you know. We were like, where's the previously on Smallville? Because because a vessel was kind of a part two of Oracle, and you're like, I need to get into this, right? But no, nothing. Weird, right? On Hulu, they're there. So I've gone onto Hulu to watch my previous seasons because that's such an integral part of the show. And I don't know. Maybe because it's like a different piece, and so like whoever, when they were putting the episode together for the DVDs, they left off the thing. It's very jarring me. It's just like, there's Clark in the Phantom Zone. I'm like, whoa, I need a previously on Smallville from somebody, but I didn't get it. So I'm glad you did, Zach. I'm glad you did. Yeah. At least one of us did. So the Phantom Zone here, right? As we saw in season 5, Clark got sucked into the Phantom Zone. And he's in the classic, you know, two-dimensional square rectangle shape, you know, banging on it, right? As we know from the Superman movies. But then takes a turn. He gets sucked down into this portal into this desert wasteland, which reminded me of Supergirl, the movie, with Helen Slater, who goes on to play Lara in Smallville. Eh? But I liked how they combine a lot of different versions of the Phantom Zone for this, because, I mean, how do you articulate something like that? I think, hey, look, on a TV budget on the CW in 2006, I think they did a good job. What did you think of their take on the Phantom Zone here when we get to it?
I enjoyed how hellish they made it, how barren and lifeless and desolate. And I could keep coming up with different names, but I just enjoyed how they made it seem like a hell nobody was, or a hell nobody deserved to be trapped in. It really justified a lot of what the Phantom's motives were. They all wanted to get out, understandably, and it was a version of the Phantom Zone that we didn't really see. I mean, it pulled inspiration, like you said, from different parts of the Superman mythos, but it was a version we didn't see, and it was original in a way, and I really liked how they did that.
Yeah, and they went on location and filmed it out in like some sand dunes somewhere, but they have the filter over it, so it all looks very alien, you know. So I think they did a great job bringing this to life, and you're right, it looked very inhospitable, not a pleasant place to be, nor would it be, right? So Clark, you know, he's making his trek across, you know, wherever, he doesn't know where he is, and he's just going, and he starts getting attacked by some literal phantoms, right? So I always thought, like, the whole, it's funny, you know, Smallville, it runs long enough to come back around to things, right? Season 5, they're like, Zod's physical body was destroyed, because they want to, like, well, we can't really show Zod because of maybe some rules from the movie division, but we can have him possess a character. So this is how they get around it. Now it's like, no, there's literal phantoms in the Phantom Zone. And, you know, I guess that makes sense, right? In some alien society, they're like, all right, we're not going to execute you, that's immoral, but we'll destroy your physical body and send your spirit into a prison. I'm like, that's like worse, because how do you even die if you're a phantom, right? So, oh man, it's awful. Clark starts getting attacked by some phantoms, and who saves him but Pascal Houghton? That is the actress's name. I don't know if I'm saying it right or not, and she might look familiar to Smallville watchers because she played the mom in Ageless. In the teaser of Ageless, she is the mom that gives birth to the ageless Baby. So I guess they liked your performance there and brought her back. Is that right?
Yeah, I actually didn't realize it was the same actress. I mean, you only saw her in Ageless for like maybe a minute or two, and she dies. So an agonizing death. So she doesn't look anything like Raya.
No, I would not have known that until, you know, I was looking up things for the podcast a couple years ago when I did Ageless. And it's like, oh, wow, that's the same actress. So, you know, those Canadian actor troupe, right? Yeah. I mean, you see all the same actors on The X-Files, on Arrow, and Supernatural, right? So, hey, good for her for coming back to the show. Obviously, left a good impression. Hey, she's using an S crystal, Zach.
Yes. The first time the S is actually shown in its complete form on Smallville.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I've said before, like, Superman Returns changed everything.
Yep.
In season five, they kind of had to use the fortress from the movies and the crystals. Because before, right, you know, it's geometry, it's geometric shapes, it's this metallic hieroglyphics and all that. And that was original to Smallville. I really like that. And then they kind of combined them both because, you know, even the knife, the Kryptonian knife we see here is like a mix between both. Right, the crystal and the old, but we still had never seen the S, because on Smallville, right, the 8 was the sign of their family's ancestors. I mean, that's what Jor-El burns into Clark in Exodus. Is like, this is the mark of your ancestors. I'm like, yeah. Oh, okay.
It's funny too, because in the Kryptonian alphabet, I'm such a nerd, I have it printed out and saved. That symbol is the S in Kryptonese, or whatever the language people would call it, and so. They found a loophole.
See, I always thought, like, I thought it was cool what Smallville was doing when it's like, all right, the 8 in the Pentagon, so to speak. I don't know, Superman Pentagon, you all know what it is. That's Krypton. And then the S is like for Smallville or something, right? And then he combines them both. And because I'm part human and part Kryptonian, you know, my heritage and my upbringing. And that's his own unique thing. And I thought that was cool. Although it's also cool when, like, you know, Jor-El was wearing the S, right? That's cool because so that there's not a right or wrong way about it. I always enjoy seeing how they figure this out. But of course, the thing on Smallville is that it's all contradictory because where did this S come from? I've been watching the show for 5 years, I haven't seen an S, but here it is, right? And we'll get into more of that. It becomes a very important crystal this season, right? So very important crystal. It's the new octagonal disc, right? For at least for this season. So anyway, Clark's like, oh, I was saved. And then Raya like kicks him. And he's like, welcome to the Phantom Zone. And like, oh, okay. Wow. This is not going to be a nice place. Even the people that save you are mad at you. And then we cut to opening credits. And hey, we got some new opening credits. Not a biggest change, obviously, between 4 and 5, because that was a complete revamp. But we got some cool new shots here. We have what becomes an iconic shot of Clark and Lex slash Zod flying together. We get Lana and Lex slash Zod kissing. Man, Zod gets a lot of play when he's in Lex's body in these opening credits, doesn't he? All the Zod stuff. And then, you know, one of the shots that I always remember is, you know, Lionel jumping out of the way of that train and Mercy. That makes John Glover's credit. And we are down a cast member, though, right? We're down John Schneider because he's left the show. And Aaron Ashmore is not yet in the opening credits. He's a guest star this season. Much like Erica Durance was a guest star. I guess that's the way it works on Smallville. It's like, we're going to be a guest star first. We're going to see how this goes. And then if you stick, we're going to put you in the opening credits next year. Of course, I say that now, Zach, that Laura Vandervoort was in the opening credits season 7 from the jump. So what do I know? So, but I say that to say that because they were quote unquote down a cast member, they had to put more footage in there. So we got some cool season 6 footage, some season 5 stuff we hadn't seen, right? But the end is always, and I think it stays this way to end the show, the end montage is always Clark flying Crusade, I think, when he flies around the Earth. And for good reason. It's probably my favorite iteration of him flying on the show, because it's actually Tom Welling, not a CGI model of Superman from 500 feet away. Yeah. Smallville opening credits. They always get you hyped. So that is season 6. We cut back and it's more riots in the streets, right? Because when we last left Chloe, she was, I don't know, man. I think we left Chloe in a much worse place than we found her. You know, at the end of the season, right? I mean, am I wrong?
Yeah, she was in the midst of an ocean of violence in downtown Metropolis, actually, right at the foot of Luther Corp. Which looks a lot different, by the way, since Clark's leap from the Daily Planet roof to Luther Corp in season 2 when he has to save his mom.
Right, right. You know, back when they used to go on location to film Metropolis instead of Backlot, right? But Chloe is in slightly less trouble than we were led to believe at the end of season five. She must have slipped out of that mob and whatever. Apparently, she messes up her leg here, Zach. I don't know where, but she tells Lionel a minute, I can't get back to Smallville with my leg like this. I'm like, what happened to your leg, Chloe? But
yeah, when did this happen?
Right. But Lionel's still around, right? He breaks free some people. Then his security, when his security guys comes out of nowhere and saves them both. What was this guy, right?
Yeah, where were they when they were being dragged out of the limo?
Right, where are you people? Right, anyway. But it's, you know, it's chaos on the streets, right? And hey, right? I mean, it's so fun to watch a fun superhero TV show from 14 years ago to escape the problems in our world today, right, Zach?
I'm not sure this episode is a good escape for the escape from problems of our world today.
No, not so much, right? But Lana's up there on the roof, because that's where we left Lana and Lech / Zod. I'm just going to call him Zod for the purpose of this conversation, right? He's Zod until he's not, right? Zod in Lex's body, we all know what's going on here. But Lana's looking at all the chaos, right? And she's like, we need to help them with your new powers. You know, you could stop all this. And he's like, why would I do that? I'm like, whoa. And he says, my name is Zod. Lex Luthor is dead. So first of all, we have a plus one for episode title, said an episode, Zod. It's said many times. Whenever you get these characters, right, that's how Smallville operates, right? Yeah, Perry. Lois. No, I'm just kidding. But
he's... they did.
Jimmy, right?
For Perry, didn't they have an episode titled Perry for his
that's what I'm saying, right? Yeah, I was going to say they always do that, but they don't always. Crypto, there's one. Yeah. So anyway.
Why didn't they do one for Lois? I'm upset now.
Yeah. They should have called season 4, episode 1 should have been called Lois. So Lucy. There's an episode called Lucy, but not Lois.
What the heck? I guess it would have been a big spoiler, though.
Right. Yes, it's become obvious to Lana now that Zod has possessed Lex. And then Lionel and Chloe bust off to the roof of Luthor Corp. Oh, because the security guard, when he rescued Lionel, he's like, your son's already inside. He's like, Lex. That's how he knows that he's up there. But they bust out there, and then Zod scoops up Lana, and they launch off, you know, Superman style. Rosamund does his, like, one arm to the sky Superman pose. And I got to say, there's a lot of great special effects in this episode, but this is probably the weakest one, Zach. What did you think of this shot where he takes off?
Compared to the Clark flying shot that you mentioned earlier.
But we just saw 2 minutes ago in the opening credits.
Yeah, it was garbage.
Yeah, it was like they did a cutout of them. Yes. Like, and they froze it and they just moved it up in the frame just with those waves, right? Because that's what they do. That's what they do to convey, like, super speed and stuff and flight later on in the show. Because I get it. Look, the butt is getting smaller. I understand. But, like, they're like, look, Clark's moving so fast. He's just the waves of the air. But, all right, yeah. So we're on the same page there about that shot. So, but they just saw Lex fly away. So they're like, all right, well, Clark failed, obviously. Because he was supposed to kill Lex and Zod wasn't supposed to be here. And Lionel and Chloe, you know, they regroup in Lionel and or Lex's office. This is always are there two offices that look the same? I don't know. You guys know we always have fun talking about it on the podcast. But they're regrouping in one of the Luthor Corp offices there. They realize that Clark must have failed. Lionel needs to go get the dagger. One of them needs to go get the dagger from the barn. From Smallville, because that's where it would be. That's the only way to know how to fight Zod. Lionel also tells us that his connection to Jor-El is gone. What do you think of this, Zach?
I called bull right away.
you're not trusting him, huh?
No, I mean, I haven't trusted Lionel ever in this show. I mean, I thought he became a better person, but it doesn't mean I trusted his actions. No, he was still a little, like, wishy-washy to me.
Well, yeah, this is their way, I think, to kind of keep him still, like, in play of, is he good, is he bad, right? I don't know, like, I swear every other villain that this ever happens to, right, like Siler in Heroes, that's the one I go to all the time. When they keep them around too long and they go back and forth, by the way, John Glover played Siler's dad, spoilers, on Heroes. Or did he? They did a lot of retconning about Siler's sister. I don't really know if that was his dad or not. But anyway, father of supervillains, right? What's his name from from Shazam. What's yes. his name? Dr. Sivana.
Yes, yeah. yes.
Dr. Sivana, Lex Luthor, and Siler. John Clover is the father of supervillains, right? So, anyway, all that to say, it never bothered me with John Glover's Lionel Luthor. All the back and forth, right? I mean, you hear us nitpicking on the podcast, but, like, I always enjoyed seeing him. I always think they found a way to make it work. And all credit to John Glover. And ultimate credit for them for finding a way in season 10. That's the ultimate way to get you the evilest Lionel back. But we're still back in season 6, so we're not going to get there yet. So they determine they need to go get this dagger. Chloe's like, I can't go back to Smallville with my leg like this. And so we're like, okay, sure. And Lionel's like, well, I have to go, right? So he goes. She's going to go back to the Daily Planet and try to decipher Lionel's scribbles because he can't anymore, allegedly. That just gives her an excuse to go back to the Daily Planet to meet a new character who we're going to get to soon. Can't wait for this guy. I'm looking forward to your take on him, but we'll get there in a minute. We go back to the Phantom Zone, and Raya is not the most gracious host to Clark. Because she's, like, helping him, but, like, not really. She has, like, a bad attitude about it. And she's like, where are you from? And he's like, I was born on Krypton, but I was raised on Earth. And then she knows that he's Kal-El. And he's like, how do you know my name? And, you know, work with your father, right? And so it's like all these people Clark runs into. You know, we have a counter on this podcast for not the last son of Krypton when we meet new Kryptonians. But I can't double count it when we see people we've already met. So, like, Zod, we've already met him, so we're not going to count him. I'm not going to count Namek and Aether. I don't know how to say her name, so I'm just going to say it real fast. Like, Aether? Aether? Zod says it here, but I don't know how to say it. My point is, I've already they show up in this episode. I've already counted all them, okay? But I haven't counted Raya, so we have a plus one for Raya. And to my knowledge, she's the only other Kryptonian we meet here. These other people, which also was interesting, by the way. We'll get there. But there were not just Kryptonians in the Phantom Zone. That's a new concept to me, anyway. I mean, to me in 2006 when I saw this, you know, it's a Fort Roz and all that in Supergirl. That's like common knowledge now to all y'all watching the Arrowverse. But to me, I'm like, there's more than just Zod and Ursa not in there? What? So anyway, that's the point. She shows Clark the S-Crystal to kind of prove that she knew his dad. And what Clark should have said is, what is that? I've never seen that before, right? Gotcha, show.
I'm wondering what your count is going to get like get to once you get to season 9.
That's a tough. I'm like, am I going to have to like freeze frame this and count how many Kandorians there are? But this seemed like a good idea at the time, but here we are, right? But anyway, we cut back to Earth, and Zod has taken Lana to where the black ship is, right? And she's like, let me go. And he says, Zod doesn't take orders, he gives them. And that's a reference to what Ursa tells the one of the, like, I think the kid in Superman 2, where he's like, let my daddy down. You know, that British kid in East Houston, Idaho. Yeah.
What was Ursa in the Phantom Zone for? She was for killing children, actually, too. So that seems.
Yeah, she had an extreme hatred of men. And apparently boys as well, yeah. Right? Because she threatened even the children of planet Krypton, yeah. As Roland Brandow said, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And then Nan straight up kills that kid in like an extended version of the Superman 2. By the way, like the kid runs off on a horse, and then Nan throws that siren he ripped off one of the sheriff's cop car and blows. I don't know why the siren blows up, but it blows up when he hits the kid and he dies. And they're like, he was just a boy. And Ursa's like, now he'll never become a man. I'm like, wow, these are hardcore villains. But anyway,
I've never seen that. Oh my gosh.
Look it up.
Oh my gosh. Look it up. Gonna have to YouTube that soon.
It's not in a theatrical cut. It's in one of the several alternate cuts. It's like a deleted scene, or it's on the TV version. I don't think it's in the Donner cut. It is in some versions on the Donner cut. I think one of them was on like Voodoo. I don't know. Superman 2 is very complicated, as you all know if you listen to this podcast and Superman fan. But anyway, Ursa hates boys and men. And boys to men, I assume the band. But moving on from there, Zod mentions Aether. Again, I don't know how to say her name. He says in the episode, I'm sorry, I don't remember how he pronounced it, but he says that Aether and Namek were his foot soldiers, right? Because he explains to Lana like this, they came out of this ship, and so they're all. This is the show's way to try and tie this together, and this is how Smallville tied things together, y'all. Just, but I at least give them credit for attempting to. So good on them, right? And he tells Lana, "There's no escaping what's about to happen," and he goes up to the ship and like turns it into a little Kryptonian PDA. I'm not sure why he shrunk it down, Maybe this is supposed to represent... I took it as like this represents the hard drive of the ship or something. Zach, what did you think of the ship going away?
I think they actually do acknowledge that it was the ship's memory later on.
Yeah, because the ship like gave out some kind of pulse that like started terraforming of Earth, right? Because that's what you do in a Superman property. You have Kryptonians terraforming Earth. Right, Man of Steel, Superman Returns to a point.
But yeah, that was Lex Luthor in that one.
but remember when Brainiac was the spaceship? Remember when Jor-El was like, "Fine, is merely an extension of the craft." Right, I guess not anymore.
Yeah,
not anymore. Again, this is Smallville, but I love it.
Yeah.
But there are issues here. And to quote the companion, actually, Stephen S. DeKnight had this to say: "Quote." We love James, but I believe he was unavailable. He is a busy man, but we did talk about it in reference to getting James Marsters back. Because you would assume that Brainiac would be in this premiere. Like, I know, I thought he was going to be there.
Yeah, because he was in the season 5 finale.
Right, as the huge bad guy that started all this. Yeah. Of course, what happened at the end of season 5 was so very vague that they were like able to like, Jor-El kind of explains it to Martha. I'm like, oh, all right, again, Smallville. All right, I'll give it to you. But anyway. Chip is gone. Now we have a hard drive, which actually that thing sticks around till season 7 when it turns back into Brainiac. Remember?
Yep.
There's always a little piece of Brainiac somewhere, right? Yep. And this is part of the comics. It's part of the DC animated universe. It's always a little piece of them somewhere. So good on him for remembering that. But speaking of how Fine is not here and is gone, we catch up with Martha and Lois because remember when they were on their flight to where they thought they were going to Washington, but. And I know you don't have the answer because I don't either. But, like, why was Brainiac flying them to the Fortress of Solitude?
I'm sure they were going to introduce that if they could get the actor back. But since they didn't get him back, I think they kind of copped out on that one.
Yeah, because, like, if his intention was just to kill Martha and Lois, wouldn't he just, pull a Helen Bryce and Lex in season 2 and just crash him into the ocean or something, right? I mean, that's...
Yep.
How many Smallville season finales are going to end on some plane crash? But but yeah, to our point about there being no Brainiac, Martha wakes up and everything is trashed, right? And nothing is there.
And there's a big gaping hole in the side of the plane, and the cockpit is just wires and broken glass, and the seat where Milton Fine was is like melted.
Right. And you're like, what am I supposed to take from this? Like, did he do this? Did he blow up?
Was he trying to destroy the fortress maybe with the plane? But the fortress crashed the plane before it could hit.
These are all good head cannon, as we call it in our field of work. But Martha sees the fortress like through the window of the cockpit, and that's where we're going. And hey, good on Martha because she drags Lois from this plane to the fortress. And I'm like, man, Martha Kent, a true super mom. Because she got Lois, like, Lois is in really bad shape, by the way. She is, like, on the brink of death. And Martha has her on a stretcher and, like, pulls her in. I'm like, good on you, Martha. And this is great because this is the first and, I believe, only time Martha and Jor-El interact, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I think it is one of a few times that Martha interacts with Jor-El's AI in all of the Superman mythos as well. I think it's the first time a live action Martha is introduced to a live action Jor-El.
Yeah, probably the first and even only time even now.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Those are the two characters that rarely, cross paths there, right?
Yeah.
So in the companion, Ned O'Toole had this to say, quote, Martha had previously only got all this information about Jor-El secondhand. I think she had been confused about the whole process. You're not alone, Annette. And not very trusting of it. Is he dead? Is he in another dimension? Why is he still able to dictate things in this kid's life when he's dead? What's the deal here? This is the one time she talked to Jor-El directly, and she was shocked by the depth of feeling he had, how caring he was, and by the fact that he was trying to be a real father to Clark. Jor-El was being a father to him and understood that Martha is his mother and cares for him too. I think it's really cool because they're slowly humanizing Jor-El over the course of the show, right? He starts out as like a bad guy almost, yeah. Right? And which I kind of like that new take to a point, honestly. But they're aligning it with the Superman legend that we know, and that's fine. But I think they do a good job of slowly doing that. And this is cool when, first of all, he gives Martha a lot of exposition. He was like, Fine corrupted this structure, and now it's messed up. that's because the fortress is red, right? That's their explanation. All copies of Fine were destroyed. I'm like, okay, all right, they're answering the stuff. But then he's like, I could not have hoped for a brighter light to raise my son, right? When he sends Martha back to because he's like, you must retrieve the dagger and kill the vessel, right?
Yeah.
And she, you can tell that Martha's like, oh, wow, I didn't expect this, right? Because that's cool to, like, have Jor-El give Martha some credit, right? Because he hated Jonathan.
Yeah, when he first was introduced, he was nothing but AI. Like he knew where Clark was going along with the rest of us, and he just wanted to give him that huge push off the cliff when he wasn't ready, thinking he was. And he just saw Jonathan Kent as an obstacle more than anything else. So they kind of butted heads a lot, and he ultimately led to Jonathan dying of a heart attack.
Yeah, I mean, if you really look back and how it all went down, right? But this is a great scene. I like how Terrence Stamp plays it because he even sounds like slower and weaker. It's like, you know, that the implication you get is the fortress, it has been corrupted and it might be dying, you know. And the implication I got is like he uses his last bit of energy to send Martha and Lois back to, you know, civilization, Smallville, I guess, because she's like, send me back. And also, side note, I love how we hear Terrence Stamp say Lex Luthor, because it reminds me of Superman 2 when Zod's talking to Lex Luthor. There's so much Superman 2 in this episode. I mean, there has to be, right? It's called Zod, but I think all the little references are really cool. But this is, God, man, I can't remember. I honestly do not. I cannot tell you the next time that Jor-El shows up. Like his voice, right? I'm trying to think. Because Martian Manhunter, spoilers, shows up and starts being the guy Clark talks to about this stuff.
Season 7? When... Or is it this season that... I know it's sometime before 7 or, you know, in 7. Because Kara interacts with Jor-El a lot.
Yeah. Oh, that, you're right. Yeah, that's it. Because Clark shows up at the fortress. He's like, hey, a girl named Kara showed up. Last time that happened, you had something to do with it.
Yeah.
And he's like, she is not your ally, Clark. Right? They don't like each other. Okay.
Yeah.
You're right. So do they just, this is a classic Smallville. They just ignore what is going on with the fortress for
yeah.
so long.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Because I can't
remember when he restarts the fortress.
Well, it's funny because this happens, right?
Yeah.
And then Brainiac corrupts the fortress again in season 8. And then it just kind of like stays that way. But then in season 9, he's talking to him. And if Smallville is not one thing, I'm not inconsistent when it comes to this stuff. But anyway, there you go. This is the last time we hear from Jor-El for a while. And I thought maybe this is their way of like, because you know, in like the Donner cut of Superman 2, like he uses his last energy, the Jor-El AI, if you will, to resurrect Clark's powers, right? I'm like, maybe that's what they're saying here. And now I'm like, okay, now we don't have to pay Terrence Stamp. Now we're done with the Kryptons. You know, maybe that's their way to handle it. I don't know. But also, you know, so many problems in Smallville could be solved if Clark and Jor-El just had a normal conversation, right? And this is another way around that. So there you go. That's the end of Jor-El for a while. When he shows up back again, it'll be a surprise to me just as much as y'all. So let's move on. we get back to the Phantom Zone, and Raya telling Clark about what the Phantom Zone's all about. I like how she says the 28 known galaxies, right? Which is another reference to the Superman movies. That's a cool thing. And how the worst offenders here, their bodies were destroyed, so they're phantoms. So again, cool that there are non-Kryptonians in this Phantom Zone, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was... I mean, it's something that's been introduced in the comics before, but to the best of my knowledge, I can't remember if it was pre-2005. I'm sure it was. Because Superman's been around for so long. But it was something that was first done in a live-action setting, which was pretty cool. And in a great storytelling fashion on a season-long stretch. And you get to learn more about, like, the 28 known inhabited galaxies and their different inhabitants, which is something I don't think we get to see again in a live-action format until Supergirl.
Yeah. where Supergirl season one becomes Smallville season six.
Yes, yes.
Oh no, we have to get these villains that have crashed. Oh my gosh. So anyway, it's hey, every Superman show loves doing the plot line, but once again, everyone, Smallville did it first. Don't forget it. So Raya says that she is one of Jor-El's assistants, right? And I'm like, what's going on? Where's Lara at when this is going on? Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
And then Clark goes, what, when you were five? Because she's like, she's in her 20s.
Yeah, she's his age, right? Yeah, a little older.
Yeah.
But hey, I think that's a good way to establish, like, time doesn't exist here, yeah. right? So that's actually a smart way to do it. But Clark is, you know, he's off, but he's thinking, right? So we give him credit there. And that's another reason this place is hell, because, like, you're stuck here forever. I mean, there's unless a phantom kills you. Like, if I were Raya, I'd be like, just kill me now. Like, right? If I've been here for eons, right? But he's like, why didn't my mom and dad come with you? Right? And she's like, well, they wanted to stay and try and save Krypton. So this is, again, we're reframing our understanding of Jor-El and Lara, or at least Jor-El.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the quote is, your father wouldn't stop trying to save Krypton and your mother wouldn't leave his sign.
Mm-hmm.
And
very good. That's good to establish when we have Jor-El's young female assistant. You're like, yeah, I designed this place with your dad.
I know. I was like, what?
Yeah, and I remember back in the day too online, people were like, where was Lara during all this? Like, there was a reality. Like, I wasn't alone in this. I know this.
No, I still get that too when she introduces herself, and then she makes that face when Clark goes, "What? When you were five?" And then she makes like this face, like, and I'm like, what is going on here? When you were his assistant at 20-some years old, you just made this knowing face like, I don't want to describe too much to this kid.
Well, you know, Clark, relationships are complicated now when I go in there. So anyway, find out that Clark's like, look, I got to go back. I got to stop Zod. She's like, there's no way out of here. He's like, look, you were with my dad. You guys know this place. I know there's a way out. She's like, okay, there is one way out. There is a back door, right? So that's where they're going to head next. So Clark is on his way back. We get back to the Daily Planet. Chloe's trying to decipher those symbols. Good luck with that. And she hears something, right? And who is it but another than Eric Summers from Leech? He's back. I don't know. He got out of Belle Reve. No, this is not. I am shocked, by the way, Zach. I am shocked that there was never an in-joke about how Aaron Ashmore looks just like Sean Ashmore, who was a recurring guest star. And I say recurring. He was in two episodes. Seasons apart, right? Mm-hmm. So it was not like they forgot about him way back in season one. He was on the show in season three, right? Sean Ashmore and Aaron Ashmore are identical twins. And yet there is no in-joke or meta-joke about that on the show. I was surprised they never went there. I don't know. What about you?
I mean, when Sean was on the show, he was much younger. There are some similarities, but, I mean, they didn't look too much alike to me.
I mean, they don't look identical. But they are twins, and they are identical. I mean, there's an episode of Fringe, by the way. I highly recommend Fringe. It's, as I've gone on record at saying many times, it's like a shorter, better version of The X-Files. Come at me, bro. There's an episode of that that revolves around the fact that the Ashmore brothers are twins, you know? And there's some twin switcheroos they go on and whatnot, you can imagine. But anyway, but Chloe's the perfect character for that kind of joke. Right?
Yes.
And that's why I was like, why was this reference not made? But anyway, I'm talking around it. Aaron Ashmore has arrived on the show. He is, of course, Henry James Olsen, not to be confused with Jimmy Olsen.
I don't even know how to describe that. That was a lot, especially when he comes back in the series finale looking exactly the same age as Lois and Clark and everything.
Listen, Jimmy, I know you can be good as reporter and photographer as your brother, so hang in there, buddy. Like, oh, we understand, right? Anyway, man, do not tell me. Do not look me in the eye and tell me they planned that. There is a DVD special feature where it's like the Jimmy Olsons, right?
Yes.
And they've got Jack Larson, and they've got Sam Huntington, and they've got Aaron Ashmore on there. It's like, we are the Jimmies, right?
Yes.
And, that he was not a Jimmy. He was Henry James Olsen, as we come to find out. Even though in spoilers, the wedding episode where he marries Chloe, James Bartholomew Olsen. I think they say his full name there.
Yes.
Right. So we've got. I've gone into full. This is what I do. Right. I go into full spoiler territory with this guy. This is a retrospective podcast. I'm sorry if I'm spoiling things for you. I would say don't get too attached to this guy because he's not the real Jimmy Olsen, but he's here for 3 years. So I guess, yes. Yeah, he's here to stay for a while. Anyway, so I'm not going to tell you what happened. You guys know. So yeah. Anyway.
They totally did not plan to have him leave the show.
Okay, so Chloe has this gun that Lionel gave her, right? And she shoots at it. She shoots at the noise she hear, and Jimmy comes like, whoa, 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 hey, I work here. And she's like, Jimmy Olsen. And that is classic Smallville right there, where it's like, we have to say the name of the character. Like we're saying Perry. Clark says Perry. He's like, who are you? I'm Perry. Perry White. Clark's like, Lois Lane. Who are you? I'm Lois. Lois Lane. Right? And so it's like, Jimmy Olsen. Right? So anyway, he's here. At the end, we'll talk about him a little more, like what you thought of him. So, but we go back to Zod and Lana. They've gone to the Luther Mansion. Zod uses the ship control panel PDA thing he has now, Palm Pilot ship, to stop the computer virus that runs across the Earth, because he wants to access some stuff from the Pentagon and, like, you know, satellites and things like that. And I, again, this shows me that, like, the lack of Brainiac was like, well, what do we do? I don't know. Just have Zod cure the virus, right? I mean, that seems so. That was such a huge thing, right? Like, oh my God, there's a computer virus. The world shut down, and it's like, yeah, it's over now. It's like, I don't, anticlimactic, I thought. What about you?
That's another thing that I think they were going to explore further if Brainiac was going to be in this episode, which he wasn't. And I do think they kind of copped out with Zod in this episode. Just not even what, like, he types on one of our computers and then puts his ship mainframe on the keyboard or something, and then it's just done.
It starts spinning. It starts spinning is the thing. Oh man, it's like Independence Day, right? Where they stop the aliens with the MacBook.
Yeah.
Oh man, but hey, look, this is Man of Steel and Superman 2 on a TV budget in 2006, right?
Yeah.
So we're having fun with it. But again, I'm loving this episode as much as we're going on side tangents about things. I am loving this episode so far because I mean, this is Smallville. Yeah. Did I think I was going to see a Kryptonian terraform and an invasion of Zod on Smallville when I started watching it in 2001? Of course not. So this is amazing stuff, right? So let's keep that in perspective. But he explains to Lana, like, yeah, so the ship put out this pulse and we're going to terraform Earth and the Krypton, and you can give me an heir and I'll let you live. And so, hey, to Lana's credit, she tries to stop him, right? And then she gets straight up impaled in the hand. Oh, holy hell.
Something like a 3 foot long metal rod right through the wall of.
Yeah. All these swords that Lex keeps around his desk, right?
Yep.
Ouch. Like that's one of the most gruesome things that we've seen on the show, I think, so far.
Yes. I mean, I've never had a metal rod go through my hand, but, Kirsten Crook's, performance for that was so good. I felt the pain myself.
Yeah, big time. And I love, actually, I had remembered not really caring for Rosenbaum as Zod, to be honest, because I was like, I don't know, like, in memory, because Callum Blue comes on as Zod, I'm like, wow, that's Zod. That's like young Terrence Stamp as Zod, and we have so many great Zods. I mean, every Zod, every live action Zod is great. I have, like, every single one of them, right? And I think I always thought back to Rosamund as Zod. I'm like, I don't know. But actually rewatching it, I actually really did like it. Like the way he talked and carried himself. He's like, we'll discuss this further when I return from your Pentagon. Like, it's just the way he talks sounds like Zod. And even like the way they shoot it, like the up angles of him, it's very intimidating, right?
Yep, yep.
And like you rarely see the ceiling in these shots in the Luther Library, but you see him. Anyway, I think they did a great job making him intimidating. And I think Rosamund did a good job. What did you think of his whole performance as Zod, Zach?
Rosenbaum is a very talented actor, because at the same time he was voicing, or around the same time he was voicing Barry Allen, and or not Barry Allen,
Wally West, yeah.
Wally West in the Justice League animated series, and his range of acting, like early on as billionaire playboy Lex Luthor who hates his father, to obsessing over Lana and Clark's secret, to villain, he like gets darker and darker, and as Zod we saw even more of that. His performance of villainy, I guess, it wasn't surprising, but it was different than the Lex Luthor we've seen and the Lex Luthor that he would become later on. It truly felt like he was possessed by a totally different person, and I think he did a pretty good job.
Speaking of possessed, we counted him being possessed in the last episode, so that doesn't count on the tally board for possession count. Plus one, by the way. So just for the record, if you're like, he's possessed. But anyway, in The Companion, Stephen S. DeKnight had this to say about Rosenbaum's performance. Quote, I really enjoyed his performance. He wasn't chewing scenery. He wasn't like this big villain. He just became very, very cold and superior and really just exuded that. He's such a great actor to start with, and I thought he was fantastic as Zod. He really portrayed that alien superiority. We're all in agreement there. I don't know what it was. I guess I was kind of let down the fact of like, oh, we just had Zod possess somebody. Like, that seems kind of lame. It's like, why can't we have Zod come? Because I'm used to Superman too. He comes out. He's a guy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, even they had talked about making James Marsters Zod, and I thought that would have been cool, right? Because like, he created Brainiac allegedly, but they change all that later, right? But like, maybe he's in his master's image. James Marsters comes out in a goatee, right? And that's Zod. Even like, I don't know if it was like rumor or speculation. Like, oh, what if like Dean Cain showed up and was Zod, right? I'm like, that would have been cool, right? In 2006, Dean Cain shows up in a goatee as Zod and fights Tom Welling. But anyway, we get a whole season with Zod later, and it's great. So I think that's why I'm like, oh, this is cool. I mean, you know, we're going to do something like four times, right? Do some variations. Anyway, he leaves poor Lana there with this freaking sword in her hand. We get back to the Phantom Zone, and Rai has told Clark, like, there's a gateway, there's a back door. Only the blood of the House of El can activate this gateway in and out of the Phantom Zone, which, by the way, They mention this here for the purposes of this episode, but they bring it back in a big way all the way down the line in season 10. So put a pin in that. Anyway, they run into Namek and Aether. The actor who played Namek does come back, Leonard Roberts, right? He, in the meantime, by the way, he'd been on Heroes as DL, one of my favorite characters on here. Did you watch Heroes, by the way? I'm sitting here spoiling Heroes for you. Did you watch Heroes?
I haven't seen Heroes, no.
It's a great show for like a season. I'm sure, you know, everything you hear about it is true. I will say this, season 2 is underrated. Things really go off the rails in season 3. The point is, with bringing that up, is Leonard Roberts played DL. He's one of the main characters on Heroes. He, of all the heroes on Hero, he was like the heroist hero. And he had the most disappointing, dumb ending, in my opinion. Very disappointing for him. I'm not going to tell you when that happened or how it happened. I'm just going to say I was disappointed. It is some time in season 2, though. So he did live all the way through season 1. But he had a family. He was he became a firefighter. He was using his powers. Anyway, he was one of the heroes. You can be like, you know what? That's what you should do. And there were a lot of people on Heroes where you're like, that's terrible. But anyway, good to see him back here. The actress who played did not come back. I think she was unavailable for something. So she's in. That's why she's in the hood the whole time, like, yep, the scarf and the, you know.
The
so you
never,
you assume that's her because, yep, Lex Zod mentioned her, but that's not her. So, but they run into Raya and Clark, and you're like, did Raya just double cross him? You don't know what to expect. Did you think Raya had really double crossed him when you saw us for the first time?
I was, in many ways, Smallville is predictable, but when it comes to Kryptonians that never existed before the show, You never really know what to guess. I was hoping she wouldn't double cross him. I was hoping she was just pretending to, and that hope proved beneficial. But I didn't really know what to expect with her.
Well, I mean, she'd been in the Phantom Zone for who knows how long from yeah, her point of view. So who knows if she was? She might have been good 1,000 years ago, but. Yeah, she's like, screw this, you know, Jerusalem's left me here, you know, and, here, take his son, we're all getting out of here. You don't know.
Yeah.
So, cut back to Earth, and Martha and Lionel have reunited at the barn, right, looking for the dagger. Martha has the dagger, and Lionel and her, like, have a hug, you know, because they've been through a lot, right? Clark is gone. You know, the place has been destroyed, and so like they have a tender moment, right? They're like, they don't know what to do, but they hug. And it's great, you know, John Glover and Ned O'Toole are like really close friends in real life, so they got all that going on. So I don't know. I'm glad the show was very smart to never like cross that line, but I always love, and I know a lot of people do, like the Lionel Martha dynamic on this show is so interesting to
yes,
me. So
yeah, it was. It's always interesting to see the parent of the world's greatest hero interact with the parent of the world's greatest villain, because both of them created the opposites there. And or had a part in creating the villain or the hero, and seeing those legends collide in such a relationship like they had, it was always fun for me to watch, except for when it was when Jonathan found the watch that Lionel gave, or when Lionel tried to cross a few lines before he became good, quote unquote good. That just made me hate Lionel, and it made me uncomfortable for Martha, because she didn't need to be put in the middle of that.
But Lana shows up. So good on Lana for pulling a knife out of her hand, making it all the way over. I don't know if there's a car she had access to. She doesn't. This is a normal thing for Lana, by the way. She's at the Luther Mansion. She's always sneaking away to the Kent Farm. Happened in season 4 finale. Happens here. Happens later on. So I don't know how. I don't know the geography. I mean, there's a map I could just go look up right now. But I don't know how close.
They're across the town. It's like you have to go by the high school, the Talon, and even Lana's old house in the cemetery before you get to the Kent Farm.
But it's a small town, right? So Lana shows up here and she's like, "Where's Clark?" And they're like, "Oh, he's gone." And I think this is their way of, Lana goes down a dark path this season, right? That's one thing that Al Goff was right about when he teased season 6. But this is their way of, like, Lana finally understanding what she overheard Clark and Chloe talking about in the season finale. She's like, "I heard Clark talking to Chloe about killing Lex, and I didn't understand, but now I do. And Lex is, you know, we have to stop him." And they're like, "Well, we can't stop." I don't know. First of all, if I were Lana, I've had a lot of questions right now. You know? But I know it's the end of the world. But I'd be like, "Look, I will help you, but you need to answer me some questions, right?" Wrong.
I mean, as a naturally curious person, I would want to know, how did Lex know Clark, or how did Clark know Lex was going to come back like this? And how did Chloe know? And what's going on here? Why are you guys in on the secret? I'd have all these questions, especially if it's about people that I've cared about, if it involves people I've cared about for the past decade.
like your Lex's dad is in on this?
Yeah.
Right?
She dated Clark for a while. I mean, they love each other. Right. And Lex's dad is in on it. I would be angry.
Oh, man. So this is interesting. I'm like, these are three characters that we never really see interact, the three of them. Right, this is probably the only scene of this entire show where it's those three characters. I would wager to guess, but Lana's like, "Look, if you need that to kill Lex, Zod, whatever at this point, you know, I can get close to him. You guys can't. Not now. So give that to me." And you know, good on Lana for understanding this and be like, "I got to do this," because she's seen what he's planning. She sees what he's capable of. And good on Martha for trusting her, because that's like the biggest. It's like, this is it. This is your one chance. You know, we trust you. So we don't trust you enough to tell you what's going on. But here, have this knife to kill Lex. So anyway, Zod had also made it very clear that he's purged Lex from. So like, Zod, Lex is gone as far as they're concerned. So that's why I think they're all more like, "All right, I guess we can kill him now." So Zod comes back from your Pentagon, as he says, and he notices that Lana's not there. Right. So he's like, "Oh, all right." I think he's like kind of impressed by Lana, right? By the fact that she kind of, it wasn't where he left her, stabbed in the wall.
Yep.
And then he tells her, like, she's like, "Okay, you know, I thought about this." And he's like, "Oh, you left and you came back, right? That's why he's impressed, right?" He's like, "Well, I mean, what's there to run to, right? You're going to take over the world. I'll be here. Let's do it." And he reiterates that he wants her to give him an heir willingly, right? That's important, everyone, for the record. Then they start getting all hot and heavy. I'm like, "Oh, they meant right now." I thought this was like a hypothetical in the future. We're like, "Oh, you want to do this now?"
Yeah. and then 30 seconds into their makeout session on Lex's sofa, he's like, "Maybe I underestimated your kind and
the female of your species."
Yeah, and I was like, "Oh, okay." And then she goes on to say, "Maybe you just underestimated me," and reveals that she hid the dagger behind the pillow the entire time. Yeah. And the whole thing was just a ruse to stab him.
And I like how, you know what, and we get him tricked at the end, right? But I like how he doesn't get tricked here, because when you always have your villains get tricked like that, it's like they lose their intimidation factor. Because I'm like, oh, well, this guy's dumb, right? But it's like, no, he's a supervillain, right? So he's smart. He's superpowers.
Yep, yep. The knife clearly doesn't work, and he's like, you shouldn't play with things you don't understand. And you're like, oh, Lana's in trouble now.
Yeah, and he snaps the knife. Yes. And again, like the way they direct everything, like these up angles of him, it's very intimidating, because this is Lex, but this is not Lex, right?
Yep.
Because it's weird to see Lex. You see Michael Rosenbaum as Lex in his house, but he's Zod, right? And they do a good job of not making it just Lex. And, you know, I love that, right? I mean, you're like, what do you do now? We are screwed. That was our one chance. Way to go, Lana. You messed it. Not her fault. She did her best.
Yeah.
And she's even crying when she's making out with him. She's like, I don't want to do this, but I have to do this to get close enough to him to kill him, right?
Yes.
But then the earthquakes and terraforming begin. We get Chloe and Jimmy at the Daily Planet. Again, we get a little bit of his backstory, by the way, of like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm working at the copy room. And Jimmy Olsen, right? I didn't mind that he was older, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because now you have to shift your understanding of like, all right, this is no longer Superman in high school before he grew up. This is like the Superman story taking place 10 years before everything should have happened. Like, this is just now. Yeah. And once you understand that, you can enjoy it. But if you're like, this shouldn't happen before he's Superman, I agree. But you have to shift your mindset about what this show is. So I say that because he's fighting Zod, right? All those things. But Jimmy Olsen is here. It was never a deal breaker for me. Because when they, spoilers, turn him into Henry James Olsen and kill him off, they were like, oh, well, of course he wasn't the real Jimmy. He's supposed to be younger. I'm like, really? That's your reasoning? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yes. And it's funny, too, because they kind of introduced Jimmy in season 2 when Chloe comes back and says, comes back from her summer internship at the planet and tells Clark about her summer romance with a guy who's cute in a bow tie wearing kind of way. And they kind of tie back into that with Jimmy's introduction this season, because Chloe has history with him.
This establishes that was real. Like in I guess Heat. Yeah. In Heat, she's like, tries to make Clark jealous. Right.
Yep.
And then they continue that in Unsafe, where she's talking to Lana about her first time. Yep, right. Oh, yep. Jimmy, this, the bow tie kind of way guy you mentioned. And then I'm like, oh, well, this is all the same guy, I guess. Because he's like, is this because I didn't call you back? It's like, so, okay, this is fine. Sure. Okay. That's fine. Jimmy can be a little older, you know? It's not like he's a CIA agent who gets shot in the head for the first scene we meet him, right? There's many interpretations of Jimmy.
Oh, my. I forgot about that one. That one was repressed. That was a repressed one.
That's Grant Gabriel from Smallville, by the way, in our connection. People get so upset about that, Zach. I'm like, all right, that clearly wasn't Jimmy Olsen. That was a CIA agent who had a cover name, who had a camera, because we know from the it's like people get mad, like, you shot Jimmy Olsen in the head. I'm like, as this very show shows you, there's still room to bring in a real Jimmy Olsen later. So, like, why are you upset about this? So, anyway, I feel like there are issues with those movies, right?
Yeah.
I'm all over the board with how I feel about them. But like to get all incensed that they shot Jimmy Olsen in the head is just foolish, because that was clearly a cover name. Unlike Smallville for 3 seasons where he was clear. Be more mad about what Smallville did to Jimmy Olsen than what BVS did. That's my take.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's just all these things. There's all these things around this Jimmy Olsen that we're just talking about now, because he's here for the first time and we can talk. I haven't been able to talk about this for 5 years and now he's here. So anyway. I do like his line, like, hey, first day of the Daily Planet and the world decides to end. I thought that was pretty funny. So Jimmy has some good, he's good comic relief. I'll give him that on the show. But Zod's reprogrammed the satellites. Stuff's moving around, right? We see stuff in space. There's earthquakes are happening. They're like, an earthquake in Metropolis? What is this, Superman Returns? I mean, how do you not think about that? Came out months earlier.
Yeah.
Like it's still in theaters right now at some theaters in 2006, right? It's September. Yeah. But yeah, you get the earthquakes and all that. Things are escalating. They have released the world engine, so to speak, right? Krypton is being terraformed, minus the dubstep from Man of Steel. But we cut back to the Phantom Zone, and Raya has triple crossed, because now that they have everybody at like the gate there, she's like, we need him alive. Don't kill him. We need his blood. I mean, do you really need him alive? Can you just like slit his throat and use that? But it's not just Namek and Earth. It's all these other you know, you see other people. We don't know if they're Kryptonian or not. So I can't count these people, right? To your point about like season nine, I'm like, I can't count these people. We're counting Raya right now. I don't know who, I don't, Batista's over there and Little Bow Wow's over there. Like, I don't know, right? I don't know who's who, but they're there. And yes, I know he just possessed Little Bow Wow, okay? But Batista was no phantom, as he says himself in Static. But moving on, she double-crosses them, helps Clark escape. This is a shot they use a lot in promos. If it, like, bloodied Clark touching the, we get the S pedestal there at this gateway. And it does, doesn't it look like Superman Returns, though, with, like, all the spikes and stuff of Krypton?
Yeah, the stone-looking spikes. Yeah.
And we see Raya get stabbed, so I guess she's dead?
Huh.
Like, she seems like an important character. You wouldn't kill her. But, again, this is a very small little thing to do. Remember when they brought in, speaking of Jimmy Olsen again, Mark McClure as Dax Zor in Season 7?
Yes.
Right? Yep. And they... I created Brainiac dead.
Yeah. Right at the end of the episode, I was like, oh, I thought he was going to be like, here's how you destroy him. Or...
Right. We should have known because they doubled down on it at the end, like, and Raya died to help me escape. I'm like, eh, okay, we'll see. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we see her get stabbed, and there's all this chaos going on, and Clark, poor, by the way, Jor-El, poor design, bro. Like, my son's going to get to the portal and it's going to suck everybody else in around him. Like, that is a poor design, right?
You, so you think he designed it for someone with only the blood of the House of Eld to be sucked through? Yeah.
Clark gets sucked through with all these other people. And good on, see, good on them for thinking this through, like, for the special effects team. Because we see everyone get sucked in and then we see Clark come down in this crater. But we see all these other meteors coming down. And you're like, oh, okay. Like, they didn't just throw that in there. I think that was, I give them credit for setting that up visually, with everybody there.
That was their season storyline. I think I remember watching the special features. They did something similar with the planning process. The whole story arc for season six was built around escaped phantoms from the Phantom Zone.
And how will it affect Clark? Because once you go in, you're not the same. That never happens. Now, again, like Smallville does everything multiple times. I guess in season 10, there's kind of a reference to that because there's no time in there. They come back later, much later than when they left.
Yep.
So anyway, there's that. But I mean, that would have been interesting, right? It's kind of like Segel is kind of messed up from being the Phantom Zone, but he's more messed up for Brainiac than from the Phantom Zone.
Yeah.
By the way, I really did like the Phantom Zone and Krypton as well, like where he was like multiple versions and all that. So again, it's Phantom Zone, really cool concept that there's no like definitive versions. No one can get mad about if you change it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like, no, it's not Christopher Reeve. I hate it. usually that's what people do. But anyway, he's back. By the way, I haven't mentioned it yet. Plus one for Blue Shirt, Red Jacket. Because he's wearing it this episode. That is one thing I do continue. You're like, why didn't you count the possession? I think you guys understand how I run the tally board. This continues from the last episode. He's still wearing the shirt and the jacket. This is a great Superman moment. I love this save. Martha and Lionel are about to like die in the Kent barn because everything's falling apart, right? And then Clark super speeds in and saves them. And it's like, da, da, da. There's no Blur theme yet. I really wish there was. And they apparently can't use the Superman theme because of stupid legal reasons, even though WB owns everything. So we just get this... Da, da. Get just generic stuff.
I never understood that whole crisscross issue because it's clearly a Superman title, and I guess maybe you could say they were holding out for the series finale, but
they remember when they used it in Rosetta,
yeah,
and Exodus. So anyway. So it's a great save though, because like you think, I mean, you know, well, I don't know, right? Lionel, Martha, they could die right now. I mean, they're not going to. They're in the opening credits. We can't lose two more people who are like the old cast members.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
But Clark saves them and he's like, where is he? He's like, Lex, right? So we see that Zod's going to kill Lana, right? For betraying him, right? He's choking her. And we have a plus one for a knockout to keep Clark's secret because Lana passes out from Zod choking her. And then Clark shows up and he uses heat vision on the, you know, the computer, the PDA, and blows it up. And Clark being smart here, I love it when Clark is smart. It's so refreshing, right? Because he shows up and he remembers he has heat vision. So he blows up the thing that looks like it's like causing the thing. And you know, this Zach is what I wanted from Arrival. Because this is very similar to the end of Arrival, right? Lana's there. She gets knocked out. They're in the Luther Library. There's Kryptonians. Stuff is going down. Clark shows up, right? And I'm like, all right, it's gonna go down, right? And then nothing goes down. Then he gets sucked through the Phantom Zone. But this is a great fight. This is one of Smallville's best fights because Zod gets pissed off and they fly out the window, break the non-Veritas stained glass window. This epic shot of it looks like Clark's flying a Superman because he's got the red jacket on, right? But Zod's the one flying, they have the cape, and that's what they use in the opening credits. Anyway, I thought this was such a great fight and one of the best fights because we have two Kryptonians going at it. So
it amazes me that nobody saw these two flying across the sky of Smallville either, though. I mean, especially when they fly into the forest and trees are toppling over and stones are being crushed. But I guess there's like the earthquake just ended, so I guess people might have been distracted. But yeah, the special effects for this scene, they still had the wave thing, which sometimes drives me crazy, but it was pretty
good. You all know what we're talking about. So, yeah. Yeah, because you know, in Crusade, he did the wave when he took off, which honestly, I know a lot of people love that. I don't really like that much. I think Superman's so cool because he could just lift up.
Yep.
Right, just effortlessly. But it's the Matrix, right? That's why people liked it. Fine, whatever.
Man of Steel kind of did the fly off pretty decently, except for when he damaged things when he flew off.
Well, that, as we know, that Superman has no regard for public property, but that's his own conversation.
Oh my gosh.
But in Crusade, when he flies for real, he's just flying. Right? It's not like there's not all these waves around him. But anyway, so cool. They go into the forest, which they do a lot. Right? There's, reminds me of Talisman a little bit. Bizarro copies this as well, where they're in the giant trees. They're fighting against each other. When Zod slams Clark into the rock and just is beating him and he's bloody, I'm like, wow, right? And this is how, you know, this is how Zod versus young Superman should go. Because Zod is using all of his powers. Clark still can't fly because he's got this, you know, mental block, which, you know, we make fun of, but I'll go with for the sake of the show for now. And he was bred to be a warrior, Cal. Where did you train? On a farm? Right? All, you know, so he's, of course he's going to beat him, right?
Yeah.
And there's a great, and I've heard Rosenbaum tell this story, you know, many times at conventions and stuff, but there's a great quote about this whole sequence from him and the companion. He says, quote, this is about the end when he kind of throws Clark into that field and then he kind of floats over him and comes down. So this is Rosenbaum talking about that. Quote, we had to do something that James Marshall and Tom Welling will never let me live down. I was up on these wires, and we were trying to figure out how Zod would come down from the sky and how he would land. No matter how I did it or how many times we did it, I felt as stupid as you could possibly could, and it finally became almost comical. James says, put your hands here, like there are jets coming from under them as you're landing. And I was like, no, I'm not doing that. That's completely ridiculous. There was one take where the cords got tangled, and I actually did a 180. I was coming in backward, landed backward, and I was like, hold on for a second, I'll turn slowly. After that, no one could even look at me without laughing. Every time I came down from the crane on a wire, you could see the whole crew turning their heads and laughing. And there I was, trying to act like the most serious guy, the most intense Zod I could possibly be. I felt like a complete ass. Another magical moment on Smallville. Because you all know what it's when he throws Clark and then he like comes down all slowly. And like I can totally see that happening. That's so funny. But that was a great landing. I mean, clearly they had their trials and errors, but that's so cool. And yeah, and Clark is beaten. You know, he's beaten here. We get kneel before Zod, right? We get it. We get the famous line from Superman 2. He had to say it, right? He had to say it. And he tells him like, look, I'm going to let the ones closest to you to live if you, you know, submit to me, right? And that's the whole thing. And we get another Superman 2 kind of reference, right? With like, it's very Superman 2, mm-hmm. right? The way it's staged. Because at the end of the fortress, you have Zod standing over here, Superman, Clark standing over here. He goes up to him. He kneels before him, bows his head, takes his hand, and then like something goes on with his hand, right? And you can just hear in your head, da, 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 right? Because I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't know about you. Like, watching Superman 2 as a kid, that's like the coolest thing to ever happen in a movie. Is the end of Superman 2, right?
Yes. Watching him beat Zod, there's this moment where you're like, finally. And you kind of feel that in Smallville repeated when he does basically the same thing. And you're just like, finally, he deserves that. Do it. Good on you, Clark.
And we didn't know what happened to that crystal. I mean, at least I didn't. Like watching, I wasn't keeping track of who had the S crystal. I guess is what we'll call it. By the way, it changes appearance quite a bit throughout the season. But Smallville with his props, it has a tendency to do that. But I guess he got it from Raya, so he had it with him. And so, like, when Zod takes his hand, you know, the crystal sucks in the Phantom of Zod into the crystal, presumably back to the to the Phantom Zone. Well, but that we find out in season 10, that's exactly where it went, right?
Yep, and the Phantom actually looks a lot like Zod from Superman 2, with the hair and the goatee.
I thought that was a great touch. Again, the special effects kind of like connecting those dots, because it's like, oh, that's the Zod we know.
Yep.
Right? And even in season 5 in Solitude, where we kind of see him coming out, I'm like, that looks like a little blurry, low quality stamp face back there. Right? So I love that they kept that continuity there. And yeah, and that's an awesome moment, right? And then Lex is now back to Lex, I guess, and falls over. And this is what I'm talking about with the lack of a theme. Like, I was waiting for the blur theme, which is da 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 da. Everybody knows that, right? And so I'm like, I'm waiting for it, because I'm like, did it come in this early in the show? No, it's just like, it's like Superman the video game, right? This or something, right? It's like this non-specific, like, it sounds Superman. It's like if you're standing in the line of like a Superman ride at Six Flags or something. This is what you hear, but it's not a theme of anything. But I guess it was the best they could come up with to, like, they want to remind you of Superman 2, but they can't use the Superman theme. So here's a little something, you know what I'm saying?
Yep. It's those dang legal issues.
Yeah, but hey, very, very triumphant return.
Yes.
For Clark. So we go to the hospital, and we have multiple hospital visits here. We have a hospital visit plus one for Lois. And by the way, there's a nice bit of set design here, with like, there's like construction lights everywhere. Like, it really looks like the town has been through some hell. Like, and they're like working on like low power and all this stuff. So I like how the hospital doesn't just look like another day in Smallville. Kind of like, you know, how it did in Vortex. Like, there's a huge disaster just happened, y'all. So yeah. And Lois here, again, just Lois being, and this is funny, but Lois being used for the comic relief. She's like, I went to a place and it was all warm. And I heard this voice, like, with an English accent. And Clark's like, Lois, you almost died. I'm sure you might have imagined it, right? And she's like, no. I think I died and went to heaven. It's like, you know what? That is dumb, but it's funny, because, like, I can understand why you think you're in this ice palace and you hear this, you know, this voice, you know, and it's like, okay, I can buy that. So that was funny.
Did Clark and Lois have that hand touch moment at this part?
Yeah, this is where he's like, well, I'm glad you're back. And they both, like, kind of look at their hands and they kind of back it away, because guess what, guys? They're going to be married one day, so it's funny that they don't like each other, right? Isn't that funny? So
yeah.
Funny.
Yeah.
But so then we have our hospital visit plus two, because we have Lex. Lex walking around looking for Lana. When he does find her, hospital visit plus three for Lana. And you're like, what do you mean, Zach? Lex just came to look for Lana. That's not a hospital visit. No, he woke up there because Clark took him there. Because he was, you know, passed out after he became Lex again. Amnesia plus one, because Lex tells Lana that he doesn't remember anything after Fine's ship first took him. Which I call so much BS on, because, like, why would he forget everything after he got powers? He should have forgotten everything after Zod possessed him. I'm like, that makes sense, right? But because it's Smallville, and we can't have Lex knowing all these things, and we have to, like, take a step, because Lex and Clark were like, before Lex became Zod and Vessel, Lex and Clark were like, we hate each other now, let's put it all out here, right? But they have to undo some of that. So he's like, I don't remember anything until 5 minutes. I don't know. I think that was kind of a cop-out. I get it why they did it, but what did you think?
Well, with any memory loss in Smallville, it always feels like a cop-out. Just like a convenient way for them to pick up the story where they left off. And kind of stick to the path of destiny, which they haven't really stuck to to begin with. And it always frustrated me when it happened with characters. Like I was one of those people where it was like, Lex can't find out a secret because he's going to be the world's most hated villain. But then I also got frustrated when Lex never found out his secret. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's not like in the series finale they're gonna like erase his whole memory. Right? It's not gonna be that. It's not gonna be some absurd like that.
Yeah.
I mean, who would do that? That'd be so dumb. Lex's like, oh my god, did I do this to you? Like, oh my god, you know, I'm sorry. And we have Lana says, it's okay, quote, you weren't yourself. Plus one for you weren't yourself. So it's a classic Smallville situation where Lex is, I don't know. So I understand why they erase his memory, but I'm like, guys, you can't keep doing this. This is like, this was a major thing. Like the midway point of the show, little did we know. But like, it's like Clark and Lex legit are enemies at the end of season 5 finale. Like before he's Zod, before all that, right? Like they're saying some horrible things to each other.
Yeah.
And you can't go back, oh, I don't remember. And whatever. Here we go. Let's see how it goes in season 6. Now we all know what's going on. So let me go back to the Daily Planet. The Daily Planet and Clark and Chloe reunite. And they have this hug. And then Clark's like, so, you can tell, see, here's the deal. I am on record of being a C-H-L-A-R-K shipper from back in the day. Clark and Chloe, right? So I'm like, all right, Lana is with Lex. It's too early for Clark and Lois. We had this great kiss between Clark and Chloe in season 5 finale. This is the perfect time to get them together, right? But they just undo it. She's like, because Clark's like, yeah, so, you know, before I left, we kind of had this moment. She's like, oh, where I laid one on you? Oh, well, you know, it's the end of the world, right? Yeah, I'm like, oh, okay, I guess it's fine. But it's like, they're both awkward about it. Yeah, and the writers clearly still never know what to do with these two characters and this, you know, will they, won't they romance, like, kind of thing. So they just leave it all so vague and open-ended because they're like, they share some looks and they're like, but then like, here comes Jimmy Olsen, right? I'm like, I hate you because you ruined this moment. This was a great moment for me. Anyway, and it's kind of the same deal as season 2, right? And Vortex, right? Where Clark and Chloe, like, you know, break up or whatever. And
yeah,
because Clark's like, oh, let me wake it up to you. And she's like, no, it's cool. Let's just be friends. He's like, oh, okay. And like, I really like, you look at that and Clark's going to be like, so we have this moment, like, or we're going to go somewhere. And she's like, oh, no, we were just the end of the world. It's cool. And Clark's like, oh, okay. Yeah. Like, so that's my, you know where I'm coming from now. That's my read. That's my frustration. What's your take on how they, again, undoing things they set up in the finale, in my opinion?
At this point, Smallville felt like an entirely new show. That's why I think season 7 was so frustrating to me, because it felt like season 3 is Smallville all over again, in a way, but with a more evil Lex. So I didn't really mind it because I never shipped Clark and Chloe. And I never, like, cared for Lex knowing about Clark's secret. So I moved on from it. I wanted him to get with Lois. I got fed up when he kept going after Lana. But that's a different story. So I didn't mind them forgetting everything that happened in season 5's finale.
So then, you know, to make it worse, right? It's like Jimmy Olsen shows up, right? And she's like, oh, this is my friend, Clark. Like, you're doubling down on the whole thing. Like, if there were any doubt of what's going on here, right? So Clark's like, whoa, who's this guy? What's going on here? Like, you're picking this guy over me? Are you serious? But anyway, that's how I'm reading it. But Jimmy says a really dumb thing here. He says, wow, they grow them big in Kansas, don't they? I'm like, you're in Kansas. Did you guys forget?
Yeah, I think they sometimes forget Metropolis is in Kansas sometimes.
Right.
Yeah.
It's because they have Metropolis license plates and not Kansas license plates.
Because they were kind
of... See, that's a Jimmy Olsen line from like Lois and Clark or something, right? That doesn't, because they're in New York and this guy's from Kansas, but you're all in Kansas right now.
Yeah.
And you know, but Chloe introduces him as, oh, this is Jimmy Olsen. And he's like, actually, it's James Olsen. And of course I said, actually, it's Henry James Olsen. But we're,
and Chloe's like, since when? And he's like, since now.
Now that is funny. See, that's the thing, right? Jimmy Olsen has always been a comic relief kind of levity character. So when they bring him on and he does that stuff, I'm like, oh, that's funny. Lois Lane has been like a leading lady character. So when she's, and I understand that the complicated dynamics of like Chloe and Lana were here first and here's Lois, right? But it's like for them to continuously regulate her to comic relief was frustrating to me for a long time. And they slowly, but you know, because think about it, like we didn't think Smallville was going to run 10 years.
No.
Right? We didn't know that. So I'm sitting here in season 6. I'm like, Lois has been here for 2 years now. The shows could end any day. And she is like nowhere near where she should be, right?
Yeah.
So that's where my frustration. You guys have heard me kind of complain about that. And so that's the difference, I think, when I'm like, why is Lois always the butt of these jokes and being silly and things? That's why it frustrates me more than like when Jimmy does. Does that make sense?
Yes. So, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Are you a big Jimmy Olsen fan?
I mean, I joke about it, right? It was like, if I were in Superman, I would be Jimmy Olsen. So I guess I kind of have to, because I, like, I am a photographer by trade. You know, I'm like, if I were a superhero, I run a Smallville podcast, right? I do. And I love Smallville and I love Superman. He's my favorite superhero. But if I was like a real, like a superhero of some kind, right? Translating my personality, my looks, if you will, because I get and my profession, I would be Peter Parker. I would be Tobey Maguire's Peter Parker from Spider. That's who I would be, right? So if you translate that to DC, I guess I kind of have Jimmy Olsen. I'm Superman's pal, right? Yep. What are you gonna do, right? So he's just been kind of there. Like, I've never been like, it's like when they invented Robin, right? It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, kids are gonna relate to Robin. I'm like, no, kids relate to Batman. Like, oh, you can be Jimmy Olsen. You can be Superman's pal. No, I want to be Superman. I don't want to be his pal, right? So, but I've never disliked him, right? I wouldn't shoot him in the head in my movie. I go, look at that. I'm on both sides of it. You can't pin me down when I really think about
really,
that.
Really bringing that back, aren't you?
You're right. Smallville was kind of they're in a new kind of era. Like, even though it's like season 1 through 4, 5 through 7, and 8 through 10, 4 is different than 1 through 3, and 5 is different than 6 and 7. So like 4 and 5 are almost kind of like its own thing. 6 and 7, I think, are very comparable, which like what's going on, the characters that are there and stuff. So you're right. The show's been on for 6 years. We need to change some stuff up. Bring in Jimmy Olsen. Sure. You know, so I wasn't like excited or like rolling my eyes at the fact. I was just like, sure, here he is. Although at the end of all this, I was like, what just happened? Clark's confused. I'm confused. Like, I guess they're dating now because they went to the vending machine together. So anyway, oh man. But there we go. There's Jimmy Olsen. He's here to stay for 3 seasons. So we get Martha and Clark. This is a great scene at the barn at the end. I mentioned Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man. This is her Aunt May speech from Spider-Man 2. She's like, I believe there's a hero in all of us, right, to Clark, because he's talking to her about how he learned about the Jor-El and how he wouldn't leave Krypton. Right? Even that's what Clark tells Zod either. He's like, I'm going to stop you just like my dad did, right, to save Krypton. So Clark is actually like taking some like pride and ownership in Jor-El. Like, even when he defeats Zod, he's like, my father sends his regards. Like, you would never hear Clark say that a year ago. He hated Jor-El. So he's getting a whole new perspective on him. But I think this was a real good scene between them. And, you know, they talk about what's going on now. Clark's like, everything's changing, right? Dad's gone and Lana, right? So to your point, it's a totally different show. So this is a great scene addressing that, I think.
Yeah.
And they do mention again that Lionel's connection to Jor-El is gone. And Clark's like, well, so is his good influence over him, right? So they're trying to plant. Oh, they're trying to plant those seeds. Like, what is he up to? What is he up to? So he does. He also mentions that Raya died. We're like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not buying it, Clark. Not buying it. And then we get a little montage here of like what's up with the villains, right? Lionel is scribbling, right, the Kryptonian, and he writes power underneath it and underlines it. So he is. Remember, there's something still there, and. If the good influence is from Jor-El is gone, what's he going to do with his knowledge and power? So we'll find out. Lex has the burnt husk of the Kryptonian PDA hard drive. So what's he going to do with that? That's very Lex Luthor, right? Look at Superman the Animated Series, right? Having pieces of Brainiac around and all that kind of thing. So I love that. And then finally, we get a nice just scenic shot of Argentina. Just a beautiful, there's a waterfall, a rainbow, and then whoosh, there's a phantom and he flies right at the screen. So we know what's going on there. And I appreciate the subtlety of them setting up that, you know, arc and mission that Clark's going to have to be on this season. And that is Zod.
Lionel told me his connection to Jor-El is gone.
Along with any influence he had over him.
Maybe we're all better off without Jor-El in our lives.
Took Raya's crystal to the fortress for safekeeping. I tried to talk to Jor-El, but he wouldn't answer. The fortress is dead. Everything's changing. Dad's gone. I can't talk to Lex. Lana's. I don't know where to go from here.
I didn't either when I was your age. Just follow your heart, and you'll always do the right thing.
Maybe some Kryptonians believe the same thing. Jor-El sacrificed himself trying to save Krypton. Raya died saving me.
Every world needs its heroes, Clark. They inspire us to be better than we are. And they protect us from the darkness that's just around the corner.
Zod got a 9.0 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 4.5 out of 5. So, Zach, I ask you, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Zod?
A B.
A B?
Yes.
A B. Tell me, explain yourself, sir.
Well, there is plenty of Superman action, plenty of character drama. We got introduced to a new Superman character, like new to the show. The effects were pretty there for a 2006 cable television show. It was the first time we got to see the Phantom Zone in the series. So there's a lot of Superman introduced. But I think the thing I liked most about this episode was the interaction between Jor-El and Martha Kent. That was something that was never done before, something that's not really been done since. Even though it was like 5 minutes long, it was such a powerful moment.
Very good. So what kept it from A territory for you, Zach?
Oh, there wasn't enough Lois Lane in it. Yep.
It was extremely Lois Lane for someone who has been added to the main credits last season, right?
Yep.
Like she has one scene where she's awake and conscious and talking to Clark, and it's like 30 seconds, right? And it's like, ha ha, Lois is funny, right? That's like, all right, to my point earlier. So,
Fair enough.
So, man, this is funny because I'm going to give this an A+. I love this episode. I was, you know, I remember not liking as much as I did now. Like I felt like all these plot holes that I'm like complaining about now, I feel like because Smallville picked these things up, like the Phantom Zone and Zod and all, and like Brainiac, all these things later come back and they either tell a new story with them or they resolve them or bring it back around. I feel like, okay, well, this was one take on that and there's another one. But I mean, just to pay it all off, just of what they set up, like you had a super battle between Clark and Lex, right? It's Zod, it is a Kryptonian invasion. I don't know. I loved it more than I thought I was going to be honest with you. So B for you, A+ for me. And there you have it. So let's get to the tally board, Zach.
Okay.
This is a huge, huge tally board. So fasten your seatbelts. We have a +1 for amnesia count because Lex forgets everything he did when he had superpowers. So that brings us to 46. We have a +1 for blue shirt, red jacket because Clark is wearing his pseudo Superman costume this episode. We have 40 so far. We have +1 for Clark loses his powers because he lost his powers in the Phantom Zone. All right, he was just, you know, just the same as anybody else. That brings us to 8. We have +3 for hospital visits. Lois, Lex, and Lana, the 3 L's. Brings us to 89. Hospital visits. We have a +1 for knockout to keep Clark's secret because Lana gets choked out by Zod before he shows up to, for Clark shows up to save her and the world. That brings us to 34. We have +1 for not the last son of Krypton because Raya is a new Kryptonian. We've met Zod and Namek and Earther. but Budget, Nod, and Ursa. I'm going to say that's who they are. So we've seen all of them before. They don't count. I don't know who those other phantoms were around Clark. So we'll count them as we encounter them. But so far, we are at 6. And then, of course, we have a +1 for you weren't yourself. Because that's exactly what Lana tells Lex at the end. And that brings us to 25. So my there you go. There's your tally board. I told you it was a big one.
Oh, my God.
I know, right? Yeah. I could tell that that amnesia count really really surprised you there.
Yeah.
Who says that's an overused trope on this show? Who says that? And finally, the Bechdel test is a fail. Because, as you said, Lois has passed out the whole episode. And when Lana and Martha do have a scene, Lionel's there, and they're talking about Clark. So Bechdel test fail for this episode. Well, there you have it, y'all. We are in season 6. We are past the halfway point of the show. I always knew I'd make it here. I didn't think it'd take me this long, but I'm happy to be here. So, and Zach, I'm happy to have you with me, man. I'm so glad we connected on Twitter. Happy to be following the Daily Planet now. So to that point, if people want to find you out there on the internet or your website, yourself, where can people find you and the Daily Planet?
Me personally, you can follow my Twitter, which is Ben's Zachary. So BenzZachary. And then the Daily Planet is... it's pretty much on all social media, but the three we mainly use is Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Twitter's where it's at, if I'm going to be honest. So you can find us there at Daily Planet DC. And we also have a website, dailyplanetdc.com. And we welcome contributors and whoever is willing to write or create. They're welcome to participate.
See, you used a clever use of your name. You combining your last name with your first name, your Twitter handle. I get some flack for my Twitter handle. More on Zach. It's MoreOnZach.
What's so bad about that?
Well, you know, for more on Zach, go to my Twitter. But people are like, oh, more on Zach. What are you, idiot Zach? Those are the jokes I get.
Oh,
fish jokes. All I ever get are fish jokes.
I didn't even that didn't even click.
Well, you have a nice, friendly mind, my friend. So thank you. But, you know, that's me on Twitter. And I'm also the host of another podcast, Franchise Fatigue. You can find us on the UFP network, talking about movies, remakes, reboots, sequels, and when franchises get fatigued. You can find us on Twitter at UFP Earth and at Franchise Fatigue. And then for this podcast here, you know us as Always Smallville with one S on Twitter, Always Hold On to Smallville on Facebook. And you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com, once again with one S. That's going to do it for this season premiere of Zod on Always Sold On to Smallville. We'll be back next week talking about Sneeze. But until then, always hold on to Smallville. Always Hold On to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Chris Fuchs, Cavante Chillis, Dallas Hernandez, Casey Cochran, James Bandini II, Darren Kirscht, Lex Ledger, Joey Deanberg, J.J. Hodges, Nathan McKenzie, Tim Miller, Thomas Navin, Joe McIndoe, Steve Rogers, John Curcio, Atif Sheik, Molly Ficarella, Trayvon Brady, Mike Franz, Dylan D'Antonio, Mariana Sachi, Rachel Miller, Andrew Parker, James Lee, Jonathan England, Adam Sullins, Joe Michael, Joe Rothacher, Zachary Burkhalter, D.J. Duina, Corey Moore, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Eddie Bissell, Jim Thomas, Nicholas Fanzler, Kathleen Caldwell, Will Hunt, Clunk Kant, Tom Gerke, T. Hamill, Nicholas Coso, Jared Gibbs, Erica Flynn, Anthony Anderson, and Jasmine McGilly. Thank you so much to all these patrons, and you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.